You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Michael Showalter's new romantic comedy, The Idea of You, and we're going to present an interview with Michael Showalter. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get into this. Actually, before we start, I just wanted to mention for everybody that we're recording this a little bit in advance, so just in case, I don't know, I always like people to know that we're doing that just for scheduling reasons. So let's get into it. What was your general reaction to The Idea of You?
Let me first talk about the fact that when I first saw the trailer for this movie, I was not impressed. And that's coming from somebody who likes the work of Michael Showalter, whether it's his, you know, more comedic work like What Hot American Summer or They Came Together, his stuff with The State and whatnot, or his more recent films like The Big Sick or The Eyes of Tammy Faye and whatnot. And when I saw this trailer, it just kind of felt like a very conventional, even somewhat cheesy romance that I wasn't expecting from somebody like Michael Showalter. And so I was kind of lukewarm on it. But then I decided to give it a shot after the reaction from South by Southwest seemed to be pretty positive. And I watched it and I came away actually really liking and respecting this movie because it is much more of a pure romance than really a romantic comedy. There are, you know, some amusing moments of levity and funny things that happen, but it's not like a romantic comedy in the way that like even The Big Sick was, or like Forgetting Sarah Marshall or something like that. It is very much squarely focused on the romance and more dramatic side of the relationship that blossoms between Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzin's character. And I was honestly caught off guard by how disarmingly charming the movie is, largely because Anne Hathaway is just fantastic in the role. And the way it digs into the story and makes it feel personal, it's, you could easily see this as like kind of like a gender swapped age gap version of Notting Hill, but there's something about it that feels stripped down and more intimate. And I think that's largely because it does focus on the more the romance and drama as opposed to leaning into the comedy and creating these amusing situations. It really gives you rich three-dimensional characters that feel like they have chemistry And on top of that, there's stuff in it that, like, I was surprised by how sexy this movie was, too. It's been a while since I've seen a romance like this where there was enough chemistry between the leads where the intimacy between them actually felt like it had, like, a sizzle factor to it. I just recently watched Anyone But You, and I was kind of like, oh, really? This is it? Because, like, you have, like, two of the hottest people on the planet right now, and it didn't feel like they had really any chemistry. And even when they had, like, their scenes of, like, you know, hooking up and whatnot, I was like, oh, okay, that's fine, I guess. but the scenes between Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzin here, like the tension between them, the romantic tension, the sexual tension is palpable. And, like, you really kind of, like, feel something when they actually get together and, like, feel comfortable enough to, like, become intimate with each other. So, yeah, it's I really like how it digs into the age gap stuff. It feels like there's some aspects of this that are pretty personal to Anne Hathaway too, because of how it approaches, like, fame and having kind of like a romance in the limelight and things like that. And so yeah, I actually really like this movie a lot.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot too. Piggybacking off of the Anne Hathaway stuff, there are definitely some comments in there where characters will say things like, you know, the internet is treating you terribly because you're a woman, you know, that kind of thing, like those kinds of conversations that pop up here that reminded me very much of how the internet was treating Anne Hathaway. You know, her specifically as an actress. Obviously, the internet always treats women terribly. That's unfortunately, you know, been pretty much a through line since the beginning of the internet. But her specifically, you know, she had that period there after she won the Oscar for Les Mis, where, like, it seemed like everyone collectively turned on Anne Hathaway for a while. And then now she sort of seems like she's back in everyone's good graces again or whatever. But just this weird sort of pop cultural swing, you know, like sometimes stuff happens where people just latch onto an idea like that. And it felt like this movie was kind of poking at that a little bit here and there. So I found that to be an interesting component of it as well. I wanted to talk to you about what you said about the fact that this is more romance than comedy. And I was curious what you thought about that for Showalter in his career, because I noticed that as well. And it felt like he didn't really have comedy as like a safety net almost to fall back on in this movie in ways that maybe he has in some of his other films. So I was curious what you made of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's been just kind of like more of a gradual thing for him of like leaning into stories that have a little more drama, a little less of a straight comedic angle. Cause I actually talked to him about this when The Eyes of Tammy Faye came out. I asked him if this was kind of like a conscious decision to kind of like veer into that territory. And he had said that it wasn't something he was doing intentionally. It's just, that's just been like the trend of like the stories that have interested him. And even in like a movie like The Eyes of Tammy Faye, where you have two targets, you know, Tammy Faye Baker and her husband, where it would be easy to make fun of them, he never like took these like easy swipes at them as characters as if they were like people in a Saturday Night Live sketch, you know. He let comedy come from natural places and kind of just like told their story without, you know, a judgmental light. And I think that it just happens that more recently he's been invested in stories that just don't require that comedic slant that we're used to seeing from him, which has really been interesting to see, because it just shows, you know, how diverse he can be as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another thing that I really enjoyed about this movie that I feel like it captures really well is that sense of wish fulfillment. And I think, you know, most rom-coms kind of deal with wish fulfillment of some kind, but this is basically like, what if Harry Styles fell in love with me, a regular mom kind of thing, you know? And that that specificity, I think, makes it feel like maybe a little bit more transportive and also intimate, like you said, than like the typical kind of rom-com setup. So that was one other thing I wanted to shout out about the film.
Yeah, and I think especially because, too, it's not the kind of thing where, like, she's lusting after him either. Like, she's very hesitant and, like, she doesn't really, like, recognize him as, like, being something that she would, like, even, you know, want to like go for in that way, you know? And so I think that that's one of the things that probably makes it feel a little more charming too, is it's like, she's not like this thirsty older woman who's just trying to get her hands on, you know, like a 20 something for her own gratification.
Yeah. And all of like the sort of globe spanning stuff, like with the tour and everything, where they're just going to all these beautiful locations and all of that. I was very like, I don't know, I just felt like whisked away in the way that the movie wanted me to feel watching all that stuff. So I kind of love that. What did you think about the boy band component? Because he is the leader of, I think the group's name is August Moon. It's supposed to be, yeah, like a One Direction type boy band, I guess, just like super popular pop group. What did you think about how the film handled that or sort of like, I guess, whether they pulled that off accurately in your view?
So I personally, I never really got the sense that like it felt like he was the leader of the band rather than just kind of like an equal member. Like he's obviously very famous because of this. And there have been comparisons and like thoughts about whether or not this is kind of inspired by Harry Styles, you know, or not, and his time with One Direction. And so I think for me, what I liked the most about the boy band stuff was that the music felt real and authentic. Like it didn't feel like stuff that they like was just put on like a back burner and they're like, well, we'll kind of make a boy band, but like the music's actually good. It feels like songs that would have come out today. The band all felt like an actual band. The Coachella stuff I was actually really impressed by, because sometimes it's really hard to pull off concert stuff like that and make it feel like a real thing, but it all kind of came together in a pretty impressive way.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I was reminded a little bit of Turning Red, the Pixar movie that also deals with boy bands, and how that also, to my ear anyway, did like a pretty great job at recreating, you know, that very, very specific pop star sound, pop group sound. I thought they did a great job with that. The one thing that I thought I was kind of laughing a little bit at the movie's attempt was like the choreography, like the dancing and stuff like that. Like if you've ever seen, I don't know, pick a boy band, NSYNC, perform in any way, or even just watch their music videos or something, like, and you watch the way that they move as a group and like the way that their bodies, just the physicality of it, you can see the, you know, the hundreds of hours that boy bands like that have actually put into the, you know, the discipline, the practice of like locking in place and everybody hitting their motions at exactly the same time and all that stuff. And like, you just can't really fake that. And they kind of try to fake it in this movie and it doesn't really work very well. Like that was the one part of the boy band experience that just kind of rang a little false to me.
So I could be wrong about this, but like only because haven't been super into like the contemporary like boy band scene in like the past, I don't know, decade or so. Did One Direction have like crisp choreographed dances? Because I don't remember them like being a big.
You know, I guess I can't say with certainty. It's been a while since I've seen a One Direction music video, so I guess I can't say. I was just sort of in my the platonic ideal of a boy band in my head. Dances with a little bit more of that sort of crispness
there. No, that's and I agree with that, but I do think that in recent years some boy bands have veered away from that stigma of like, okay, everyone has to do the same dance moves and stuff like that, whereas it's more of like a, hey, we're just a cool group and we're vibing up here on stage, you know, like there's still obviously like the groups like BTS and stuff like that where like it's all about those choreographed dance moves and things, but I feel like that there was like a sect of boy bands from like the late 2000s into the 2010s where like they weren't necessarily the same kind of like, you know, choreographed kind of boy bands where they were all dancing together.
But okay, I fully acknowledge that I could very well be wrong in this component. So I appreciate you dropping some knowledge on me there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so I think that's good enough before I really want to talk about the ending of this movie with you, Brad. But before we get into spoilers, did you have any other aspects of the film that you wanted to shout out or like things to talk about before we sort of hit the metaphorical spoiler gong here?
I want to give a shout out to the actress who plays Anne Hathaway's daughter, Ella Rubin. This was one of the times where like I really felt like they nailed the casting as far as someone's kid, and it really felt like it could be Anne Hathaway's daughter. Typically like when you see kids in movies, like they're just cast because like, oh, they're fun kids and they're charismatic, but they don't ever look or feel like they're like the kids of the actors that they are supposed to be the offspring of. Mm-hmm. And there was something about Ella Rubin's performance and her overall look. And I wonder if it's just because she kind of looks like a young Anne Hathaway from like Princess Diaries, but like, you know, with like a cool, you know, modern day edge that kind of made me feel like, oh yeah, that feels like it's Anne Hathaway's daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought she was a good actress. I thought she seemed to me, I don't know, I didn't look up her age in real life versus the age of the character, but she seemed much older than, you know, a young high school student to me.
She does look a little bit older. Yeah. I was like, she's going to camp?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. That was exactly what I was going to say. At one point, she shows up at camp, and my wife and I like turned to each other and we're like, wait a second. Like, is she a counselor here or like what's going on? Because she's.
Yeah. It looks like she is 22. So she's kind of right around there. She still looks young, but yeah.
Yeah.
And I also like that they cast Annie Mumolo in like a little supporting role. I actually wish that we would have been able to see more of her, because I really liked her role in the movie.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something maybe left on the cutting room floor just for pacing or something like that, because it seemed like she had a pretty small role, and it's almost like, you know, when you cast somebody like that, you want her to lean into her strengths as a performer, which presumably would involve like some comedic improv and stuff like that, you know, bouncing back and forth with Anne Hathaway, and there weren't really that many scenes of the two of them kind of hanging out. I agree. I would have liked to see that as well. But
and she did get one of the best lines, which was, oh, did I not tell you? No one likes seeing a woman happy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's get into some spoiler stuff. So this is, and the movie is out on Prime Video right now. So if you've not had a chance to see it yet, you can press pause, watch the movie, and then come back. But I wanted to talk to you about the ending, Brad. So as the film approaches its end, Celine, which is Anne Hathaway's character, and Hayes, which is Nicholas Galitzin, they're together and everything seems to be fine. And then Izzy, the daughter, essentially has this really, really bad day at school. And Celine begins to realize what effect her relationships are actually having on her daughter's life. So she goes to break it off with Hayes again. And they agree that in 5 years, they'll revisit the possibility of trying to get back together. But each of them should try to pursue love if they happen to find it in the meantime. So 5 years go by, and then Izzy is now off at college. And the movie basically ends with Hayes walking back into Celine's life and the two of them getting back together. So I was curious what you thought about the ending of this story.
You know, I liked it because it did feel like they didn't try to go for like this happily ever after kind of ending. Like, you could easily see that in it, but I think it's just the kind of thing where, like, it leaves it open-ended. Like, sure, he comes back, and, like, maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't, but, like, the fact that, like, they're going to give it a go after waiting 5 years, you know, shows that, like, it's something that still stays with him. It's something that she's probably still, you know, willing to try out and give it a shot. And I kind of appreciated that this was kind of, like, almost like the anti-La La Land, in a way. Where, you know, La La Land, we get like this whole alternate thing of like how it would have worked out if, you know, it went this way instead. But then they've both kind of accepted that they have to have these separate lives and like their romance, you know, just wasn't meant to be. And here you kind of you get that time where it's all that everything has happened in their lives. And even though like you don't see it, you understand that they're both, you know, happy doing whatever they're doing. But then like they get a chance to essentially make it right. So I felt like it was a nice ending without being overly saccharine about it.
Yeah. The idea of yearning taking place over literal years, like the beauty of the reunion with like the often unspoken tragedy of the sacrifices that people have to make to get there in scenarios like that, is one of those romantic tropes that pretty much always gets me. Like when it's done right, there's almost nothing that I find more powerful as a viewer. And to me, this movie came close to nailing it, but I think it kind of sort of speeds through its conclusion a little quickly, like so quickly that I didn't really have enough time to see the two main characters dealing with the weight of the decision that they made and then really
feeling. Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a little more, like maybe like 5 minutes of like what they were doing, like living their lives over those years, as opposed to just, you know, 5 years later.
Yeah, because then when they're reunited, you could really feel that sense of the weight lifting. And I think that's where like the emotional punch comes in for me anyway. And I also wanted to talk to you about like the decision for them to break up at the end. Like, I don't have kids. I know you don't have kids either, as far as I know, Brad.
As far as I know, too, I mean.
But I'm guessing like many parents would want to prioritize their kids' happiness over their own. So like on paper, I understand why Anne Hathaway would make the decision to break things off there. But like on the other hand, I guess it seems like the main reason that she split up with Hayes is because Izzy's classmates were kind of messing with her in various ways about her mom's relationship with this pop star. And the idea that just because she breaks it off, that those kids would then, you know, suddenly forget about that and just like move on with their lives kind of struck me as a little far-fetched. Like, these are high school kids we're talking about, you know, in high school kids will spend years calling someone piss pants Steve because a kid spilled some water on the front of his pants one time, you know? So like, I don't know. It's just
super bad. People don't forget.
Yeah, exactly. So it just kind of, I don't know, the idea of like, it seemed a little clean in the movie, I guess is what I'm saying. So I was wondering if you felt that at all, or if you're just like so into the story that that didn't matter, or if like you were brainstorming other ways that these characters could have like figured some, you know, some way to continue this relationship, or what you thought about any of that.
Yeah, I think I agree with that to some extent, but I also do think that as petty as high schoolers can be about things like that, they can also be equally as like, just like brief with them, you know, where like it's an obsession for a little bit, but then if it's not something that is really prominent anymore, or like you know, something that is keeps popping up in their lives, then they just stop caring and it doesn't become a thing, you know, like the idea of like basically something being a meme, you know, in high school culture and then moving away from it. And I think that if anything, the decision is probably just based on the idea like if they keep doing this, this isn't gonna go away, you know, like where they'll always be, you know, on tabloids, and there'll always be someone, you know, trying to take pictures of them. And like, I think not wanting that life for your kid at a very pivotal moment in their life is pretty understandable. Yeah. Even if you do want that level of happiness. And I do think that it's the kind of thing where even if you think that like it'll get better as it goes on, like it's just a lot to deal with. That's something that like, you know, even us, you know, knowing how this industry works, you know, I don't think I could ever understand how stressful and frustrating and annoying that would be.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I think that if they do break up and like, he's not around anymore, then like a lot of those people just aren't going to care, you know, like you get your 15 minutes of fame and then moving on.
Yeah. I just wanted those two crazy kids to get together, you know? And I actually thought they did a good job too, with like transitioning him out of the boy band space and into like the singer songwriter, like solo performer, where like,
yeah, for sure.
Even the look of his character changed, you know, in that 5-year gap. I think he's got like some facial hair or something that he did, or like some sort of styling or something that looks a little bit different. It looks like he's dressing a little bit differently. And just kind of like, it felt real. It felt like that amount of time actually had passed. I just wish I had a little bit more time like with those characters to sort of feel the weight of that decision. But okay, anything else that you wanted to mention about the idea of you before we get into your interview here?
I don't think so.
All right, well, here is your conversation with Michael Showalter.
Hey, Michael, how's it going? It's great to talk to you again.
Good, how are you?
Fantastic. Let's just dig right into it. You know, Michael, I got to say, I feel like you're one of the few filmmakers working today who is making movies in the same vein as Nancy Meyers, Nora Ephron, James L. Brooks. And I was wondering if like, are those, you know, some of the cinematic influences that helped you shape this movie, or were there other ones that kind of helped inform your approach to this film?
I mean, I love all those directors that you just said. And yes, I mean, those are the movies that I grew up on and that I loved. And so I would add to that list Cameron Crowe and Richard Curtis, Woody Allen, and probably quite a few others. But I, you know, love, I grew up watching romantic, John Hughes, romantic comedies and movies where you had all the elements of great filmmaking. You had great performances, you had great stories, you had great cinematic elements in terms of, you know, production design and wardrobe. And it was seen as a genre where great filmmakers could make great films. And so those are just the movies that I aspire to make. And so I grew up loving those movies, and oftentimes they have a little bit of something to say beyond just, you know, a kind of cute romantic story. There's usually some other idea at play, whether it's about friendship or life and death or coming of age, what have you. Those movies tend to kind of have a dramatic element to them that I, as a, you know, Say Anything is a great example, or When Harry Met Sally is really all about platonic friendship, and it really examines these things. And so I think of the romantic comedy as a very serious genre in film. And so I approach it that way.
Now, you've parodied romantic comedies a couple of times before. It's you the, but
Yeah.
this in more recent years you've had romances that have been more focused on the relationship and drama, but there is still a touch of comedy in there. Do you find yourself approaching directing any differently when comedy isn't taking the spotlight as much? Is it hard to resist the desire to like insert more jokes in there?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, the movies, the films that are, well, there's I guess the Baxter I did direct. They came together. I did not direct. No, I think, I mean, that's another genre that I love, which is parody. And so I love Airplane movies and Mel Brooks movies and stuff. And so they kind of exist in a separate thing. So it's like when I'm making a sort of earnest, more earnest type movie, it wouldn't feel right to do those kinds of jokes. Every once in a while, a joke like that will occur to me, and I either don't, it doesn't feel right, or if in some cases I might shoot a silly joke, it all always gets cut.
Yeah.
It always gets cut. There's a certain tone to these movies that are really important, and you want comedy and you want fun set pieces and fun situations, but the two genres don't really fit together because one is very meta and kind of poking fun at the genre, and then the other is it's entirely sincere and earnest, and so they don't it would be hard to mix them together.
Yeah. Having seen the Baxter and they came together, it's clear that like you were just so tapped in to like all the cliches that romantic comedies tend to deliver. Are there any tropes that you specifically go out of your way to avoid when it comes to doing your own romances and romantic comedies?
There's no tropes that I avoid, but I would say, kind of going back to my first point, which is it's interesting because tropes and cliches, at least I see, are different. A trope is a convention of the genre that, if done in the right way, is very satisfying.
Yeah, that's fair.
For me, a cliche is when you see something that is a regurgitation of those tropes, wherein the filmmaker and or writer doesn't even know why it's there. And so they're doing the trope without even knowing what the purpose of the trope is.
Right.
And that when you see that feels like cliche, because I love genre movies and I love seeing the conventions of the genre repeated. If the filmmaker and or writer understands its purpose,
Yeah.
whereas if it's just in there because that's what always happens and it seems somewhat arbitrary, like, well, there has to be a scene when this happens, and so they just put it in the movie,
Yeah.
then we're in cliche territory. And so I would guess my answer to that question would be, I avoid cliche, but I really love tropes. I would also say that I like for the movie to hopefully be about something more than just the romance. So whether that's The Big Sick or this movie or other films I've done, I hope that the romantic story is something that we can also address other things through that romantic story, so that it's not only a will they or won't they relationship story, that it's also addressing other ideas about adulthood, about life, death, career, friendship, what have you.
Yeah. What was the process like creating the music for August Moon? Because it genuinely sounds like good pop music you'd hear on the radio today. Did you yourself have like a certain style in mind you wanted to emulate when developing the sound and those sequences?
Well, we had an incredible we have an incredible screenwriter, songwriter who wrote all those songs, Sabin Kotecha, who is a very, very successful pop songwriter who's written pop songs for every single major recording artist out there right now. And so we knew that he would ne we fully I fully in you know I would never be able to do that. So he was the perfect person for it. But we did know that we wanted to have them have good music. We
Yeah.
wanted their music to be cool and fun, and that this they weren't August Moon. We didn't want August Moon to be cheesy, or we didn't want to satirize the boy band. It was much more of an embracing of and a celebration of the boy band.
Did you have any like specific boy bands in mind that like you kind of wanted to emulate through August Moon, or was it just more of like a general vibe?
And for me, it wasn't a specific boy band, but it was more, I feel like, just paying attention to the current pop stars of our generation, whether it is a Harry Styles or a Billie Eilish or a Dua Lipa or Taylor Swift or Frank Ocean. The way these pop stars express themselves, the way they look, the way they function in society as artists, as public figures, it was more about that for me.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway is fantastic in this movie, and it seems like she's really been touched by the role and also the reaction to it based on the, you know, the screening from South by Southwest. I was curious if she brought any kind of new perspective, maybe changes to the script when you became involved, or even decisions like on shooting days that kind of helped her tap into a bit more and helped you kind of see maybe like a different perspective you hadn't seen before.
Oh yeah, I mean, Anne very much. We worked together, and she brought an enormous amount of ideas, and very much played a role in the shaping of her character from her dialogue, from choices that we were making, and how we were going to tell her story, to the way she the clothes she wore, to the kind of artwork that was in her gallery, to the way her house was decorated. Every element of the character Anne had a lot of input in, and we collaborated on all of it, and that was that was amazing to be able to have that experience with her.
Yeah, because it seems one thing I really appreciate about it is how it takes something that feels like it's you know, something that people kind of understand on a surface level about like living life in the spotlight and makes it feel very authentic and personal. And I feel like especially with somebody like Anne Hathaway who experienced such real vitriol from the internet, it adds a whole new level to like her being in that role.
Totally. I totally agree. I'm glad you picked up on that, because I do feel like that's part of it. You know, she's definitely experienced what it feels like to have people having opinions about her, and to have her, just her ability to live her life the way she wants to be so affected by other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to give you credit too because you've given us a romantic comedy that is also quite sexy. I don't remember the last time I saw a romance of this caliber that was both extremely authentic and felt like there was like a genuine sizzling chemistry between the leads. As a director, how do you approach scenes like that where they feel intimate without feeling gratuitous?
I mean, some of it is editing, obviously. Like you kind of get a lot of footage, and then you try to shape that in the edit. We could have edited it in any number of ways, but I think, again, we wanted this to be a sexy movie. We want to show them having a great time with each other in that way, and to show the sex in a way that was also respectful and intimate, and not trying to, be exploitative about it, or to kind of make it pearl clutching or anything. But it's a beautiful thing that these two people are sharing with each other, and that was important to try to show that.
Yeah. You know, so studios really seem like they're not taking as many opportunities to bring romances like this, you know, romantic comedies, even full-on comedies to the big screen anymore. You know, a lot of them end up on streaming. What have you found, do you think is like makes it difficult for them to take chances on the movies that you've typically made over the years?
I mean, I think, all prior to pre-COVID, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it feels like COVID changed that a
Yeah.
lot. I had prior to COVID, had made a bunch of movies that would all had all been theatrical. It was, you know, nothing was gonna, you know, it seemed like everything was kind of staying in that way. And then I think COVID changed so much. This is not, you know, marketing, distribution, how movies are consumed is not really my area. I love having the opportunity to see the movie in a theater with an audience and to see the reaction that the movie gets. But I also am someone who myself watches a lot of movies on my laptop, my computer at home and in the middle of the day, you know? And so you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that my own viewing habits have changed. And I've had a great experience working with Amazon on this film. They've been really supportive of us and have been great partners to us. And so I'm happy and grateful to be still able to be making movies, telling stories, and we'll leave it up to those guys to figure out what's the best way to get it out there.
For sure. I'm curious, do you have any desire to ever jump into genres like horror or sci-fi? Have you ever thought about what a Michael Showalter, sci-fi or horror movie
I
might
would
be?
love to. I mean, I have favorite movies in all of these genres. So when I make any movie, I would, you know, I look to someone like Danny Boyle, who's made romantic comedies, but then he's all, you know, he made Yesterday, and then he also did 28 Days Later, which is one of my favorite movies. And he did, I believe it's, is it called Sunshine, which is a science fiction movie. And there are directors, many great directors out there that make all kinds of different genre films. And I would love to make a horror movie or a science fiction. And if the right one came along, I would love that. And I think it would be similar in a lot. It would probably feel similar. But as I said, there's examples of movies in those other genres that feel that way. Like 28 Days Later is an example of a horror movie or whatever you want to call it. What would you call that? A post-apocalyptic, zombie film or whatever. But it has that feeling of a Danny Boyle movie. And so that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I would love to.
That'd be great. Now, it's been a little while now since you've collaborated with David Wayne. Is there any chance that you guys have anything in the works, maybe hopefully getting back together sometime soon?
Nothing imminent. Really happy to be doing the work that I'm doing right now. And so there's nothing, you know, we did have our two seasons of Wet Hot American Summer on Netflix to kind of continue that story. And that was really great. There's nothing imminent though. Obviously always open to whatever the future may bring.
Right on. Well, they're giving me the light. But so it was great talking to you, Michael. Appreciate it. I really
Thank you,
loved
Bradford.
the idea of you, and I can't wait to see what else you got cooking.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Take it easy.
All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about the idea of you at slashfilm.com, and I will link to our review in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.